Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to another episode of the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast. Today is part two of my two-part interview with Joshua Shea. For those of you that missed yesterday's interview, part one of the interview, you need to go back and listen to it to catch up. Joshua Shea was living the life. He had success in business. He had the wonderful family. He had the money. He was in considered a rising star in politics up in his district in Maine. Who knows what could have happened? But he ended up losing it all because of a pornography addiction. One day the police came knocking at his door, and he spent the next few years in prison. Now, folks, that's how serious the pornography addiction is in the United States. Joshua has made it his mission to proclaim it loud and clear and far and wide. And we're helping him do that through this episode, through this interview on the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast. Because statistics prove, and he goes over some of the statistics, that this is not something that is just, you know, for derelicts and bums and, you know, down and out folks, or, you know, it is a trick of Satan to get you hooked. And it's just like, you know, we talk about, it's just like the drug addiction. You know, you're chasing that high. You're constantly chasing that high. And it is devastating in the end. Because when things come crashing down, they crash big. So we're going to jump back into part two of my interview now with Joshua Shea. You need to share these interviews, folks. Put them on your Facebook. Put them on your social media. Share them. Let people hear them. You may not be addicted to pornography, but I can guarantee you somebody you know is, probably more than one person, because it's that far flung and it's not something that people go around sharing. Hey, I'm hooked on porn. How about you? You know, you need to share it that they may hear it. They may recognize that this is the path that they're on and they can stop that train and get off before it's too late. You need to share it with them. Now, here's Joshua Shea, part two of our interview. I have to admit that, you know, I haven't been, you know, up in the accolades and all that stuff like that, but I was in the military and, you know, living the life of being, you know, the great leader, you know, of everything going on. I was a drill instructor and all that, and alcoholism got a hold of me. My father was an alcoholic. He'd been in jail half my life, in and out all the time, married four times. My mother died when I was 18 months old. But so I was bounced back and forth between my grandparents and him. And I swore up and down I was never going to drink. I was never going to go to jail. And I was only going to be married one time, and that's it. And one night, I found myself in jail on the verge of a divorce, well, drunk in jail and on the verge of a divorce.
And that's a hat trick.
Yeah. And I mean, and even that didn't really serve as a wake up call. It was probably another 8 years before it all started, you know, being revealed, I guess you could say, that of what was going on in my life. And I started making the changes. But I can relate a little bit to what you were talking about, trying to hide, you know, your persona in public is one thing. And then when you're at home, it's different.
Absolutely. I can relate to that 100%. Yeah. And it's tough to do. It's tough to keep going and keep going and keep going.
Yeah. And that just facilitates more alcohol, you know, because you're trying to drown the pain and, you know, you're not happy with who you really are. And lifting up that persona, that takes a lot of energy.
Well, and like you also read, what happened with my persona was I started actually taking a little bit of a public hit because my magazine plateaued. And instead of putting out, 120 page issues, we were now putting out 80 pages and 70 pages, and the company was starting to fail. Yeah. And, that's one of those things where when things are going very well, with a lot of money's flowing through the door, you can hide the fact you're not that good a businessman. But yeah. When money starts getting tight, you can't hide it. I think the biggest mistake that led to my ultimate downfall with the police, showing up at my door a year and a half later, was that in early 2013, I made the decision to pull myself off of medication I took for bipolar disorder. Mm. And I've been taking that medication for 10 years, kept me nice and even. And when I saw that my company was starting to fail, I said, I could get a few extra hours every day. I could tap back into that energy that I remember having before I went on these meds and the creativity I had before I went on these meds. And what happened was, pulling myself off of those drugs, I found myself using pornography and alcohol at levels that I never had before. That was when I reached the real critical point of the addiction, was when I made the horrible mistake to not take care of my mental health.
Yeah. I mean, I've read reports that there are so many people considered to be closet addicts concerning pornography, and the number of closet addicts who are pastors or in ministry is astounding. Do you have any numbers in that area?
Yeah, there were a couple different groups that put out numbers. I generally trust the Barna group. They do a lot with the church, but they also do a lot outside the church. They have they're an independent organization. They don't present statistics and then say, and now buy our, product. So I really trust them. What they have is their statistics from 2 years ago, which was their most recent porn study, said that 57% of pastors and 64% of youth pastors have admitted that they've struggled with porn in the past, mm-hmm. and that 21% of the youth pastors are still using every day, 14% of the regular pastors are using every day, and of those who are using every day, about half feel that they are addicted. Almost all of them express a great sense of shame with it, and about half of the pastors who look every day say that they live in constant fear of being discovered. And yeah. that's probably because of the churchgoers who are surveyed, 42% of adults think that a pastor who looks at pornography should be kicked out and should be asked to resign. Younger Christians tend to be a little bit more tolerant towards it. So this is not just a matter of people finding out about a secret lifestyle or a secret, hobby or a secret illness. This is also about, losing your job, losing your lifestyle, losing your livelihood. And that's really what addiction is. As you know, it's knowing that you're doing something that is wrong, knowing that you're doing something that will have harmful effects, but still not be able to take care of it. I have a feeling that those numbers of addiction are actually a lot higher. These are people who self-reported.
Right, right. And I've read that even women are porn addicts, a lower number than men, but shocking nonetheless. Have you counseled many women in this area, or do you have statistics on that?
Yeah, I actually have. I do run a side business right now, in addition to my writing, where I do counsel porn addicts, both men and women, and I do speak with two women right now. And I also deal a lot with the wives, girlfriends, mothers, fathers of porn addicts, and help them walk through the beginning stages and get them to a place where I can hand them off to a true professional who can deal with them. But yeah, women are actually the highest growing percentage of porn addicts right now.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's also interesting is that women are more likely to take their porn addiction outside of the computer or outside of the TV screen. 80% of women who define themselves as addicts have said they either have or have strongly thought about acting beyond the porn addiction. And that's regardless of if they're married, not married, in a relationship, whatever, they more than men take it to the next level. And with women under the age of 30, which really sees a big cutoff with porn statistics of men and women under 30 and men and women over 30. Because if you think about it, people who are 30 years old, they are right at that age where they do not remember a world before the internet.
Right.
They grew up on the internet. They didn't have to go get videotapes from the back part of the store, or they didn't have to go and get a dirty magazine that was wrapped in plastic. They've been able to get their porn by just clicking on it. So the numbers, it's quite disturbing, the numbers of men and women under 30 who are addicted to pornography. Then you've got that 30 to about 60, 65-year-old group who have learned how to use the internet and it's been introduced to their lives. That number of addicts is lower. And then when you go over 60, 65, the numbers really fall off because those people just never really have adapted to the internet and made it a part of their lives for the most part. So there's a direct correlation with the internet. Right now, across all across all ethnicities, education level, income level, 34% of men under 30 years old say that they believe they have a problem with pornography online. Think about that. 34% of all men. That's one out of three men you see on the street under 30 years old. Now, if we don't take care of that in the next 10 years, that means it's going to be one out of three males under 40. Although, if you look at the way the statistics have changed, within 20 years, it's going to be closer to half the men under 50 are addicted to porn. Now, we ignored the opiate crisis in this country for a whole bunch of different reasons. This is a crisis that we can see coming right now. The numbers are there. While the psychologists are finally just coming around to the fact this is actually a real addiction, it's the economists and the statisticians who have laid out just how bad this is going to be. And if we don't take care of this, you tell me what it looks like in 2050 when half the men in this country are addicted to pornography if we don't do anything. That's going to make every other healthcare crisis look like nothing in comparison.
Yeah, and that's not even counting the women.
No, it's not, because at that point, half the men are going to be addicted to pornography, and about 30% of the women are.
Yeah, wow.
Imagine that. You put 20 men and women into a room, and you're only going to have 8 of them who aren't addicted to pornography. That's crazy.
Yeah.
We've got to do something about this.
Many I talk with believe that the USA is the leading cause of the pornography addiction in the world, mainly because of Hollywood and the liberal theology that promotes these things, things that God clearly states that he abhors. What have you heard concerning that area, that the U.S. is the leading cause of it?
Well, I mean, that's an opinion. Technically, there's actually far more pornography being made in Russia.
Really?
There's firm, and you want something to really blow your mind. As far as underage pornography goes, more than 90% of it is made by the kids themselves and trading it amongst themselves. I think that it's a little dangerous to inject politics or that kind of thing into this issue, because then you start finger pointing. When the fact is that I have met every type of person who is an addict, rich, poor, fat, thin, young, old, black, white. There is no stereotypical addict. And I've met plenty of Democrats and I've met plenty of Republicans. Everybody feels the same shame. So I caution about making it a discussion at all about morality, because that's when people start to feel shame. And people are only going to step forward and start talking about this. And I'm not even talking about necessarily as an addiction. We need to talk about the fact that 80% of people under 40 years old just look at porn in general. People are only going to talk about this if they, number one, don't feel judged, and if they, number two, feel safe. And if we can create safe, judgment-free conversations, we can start getting at the core of it. And ultimately, I don't care who you vote for. I just want you to have the education when it comes to what this could possibly do to you, because it's like drugs, it's like alcohol, it's like gambling, it's like food addiction. Pornography addiction is an addiction, and it's an insidious one.
And with just about every other addiction, the high that you're looking for never is satisfied. You always want to go one step more, one step more, one step more.
And that's the science of addiction. You flood the dopamine receptors in your mind. You know, what once did it for you, you know, as an alcoholic, you know, once it was a certain amount number of beers, then you couldn't drink enough beer, so you had to move over to wine. Then you couldn't drink enough wine, so you had to move over to the hard stuff. Then that didn't do it, so you had to move to the really nasty hard stuff. Mm-hmm. And that you just keep chasing this high that your brain science, as you're, you know, you're rotting your brain. Essentially what happens in addiction is the same thing as that happens in diseases like Alzheimer's or dementia. You start to rot your brain away. You start to fry your brain. And when people say that, you know, addiction isn't a disease, which is quickly, you know, changing, thankfully, it's just look at a healthy brain and look at an addicted brain and you'll see a diseased brain right there.
Yeah. How did this situation that you were in with being arrested and everything, how did that affect your family?
It was obviously a very rough time, but you know, I think it ultimately brought us closer together. When I was arrested, I was only in jail. Nobody was at the house at the time. Thankfully, my son went off to school just as the police showed up, and I, you know, we gave them a cover story. They were actually very good about it with me. My wife got me out of jail a few minutes after I was there, and we came back to my house, and there was already TV news vans there.
Wow.
And that day, we had to dodge TV news vans several times. One time, we were actually at home. They showed up. We ran from our living room to my bedroom and flipped on the TV. And I got to tell you, it is surreal when you're watching TV in your bedroom, and you can see on TV your dog in your living room barking at the TV people on your front lawn.
Wow.
It's one of those things where you just stand there going, I wouldn't believe this if this was a movie. And my wife wanted to know one thing right up front. When she picked me up, I said, you can divorce me. No questions asked. Take whatever you want. I understand. Because you just don't put your wife in this position.
Yeah.
And she's just looked at me and said, I want to make sure that this isn't involving little kids. And I said, no, absolutely not. This was a teenage girl who looked like an adult. I was so sick in my head at the time that I let it happen. And I don't make any excuses because I was the one who decided to pull myself off of my mental health medication. Mm-hmm. I knew that I needed to take care of my mental health. I didn't. And this was the result. While I may not have been making fully cognizant decisions at the time, I did make the decision to not take the pills. So I try never to minimize. I try never to justify. I did 6 months in jail. I deserve to do 6 months in jail. And I think that I came out of it a much better person, a much healthier person. Had those police officers not showed up at my door in March 2014, I tell you, I only give even odds that I'd be here talking to you today.
Yeah, yeah. What are some red flags or warning signs to be on the watch for? Not just in others, but let's start in our personal life.
Well, take a look at, if you look at pornography, the first thing that's kind of important to say is that this does not mean that you are a raging addict. There are people who can drink like a normal person. There are people who can go and gamble like normal people. We can talk about the morality of you looking at porn, but just because you use it doesn't mean that you're an addict. So just know that. But early warning signs, are you lying about looking at your pornography? Are you keeping secrets about it? Are you covering up the nature and the extent of it? If somebody confronts you about using porn, do you get angry and irritable? And then in your real life, are you starting to see certain sexual dysfunction, like erectile dysfunction or an inability to finish? Those are some of the really early warning signs that only you will notice if you're an addict. Some of the ongoing signs where people start to notice things happening are escalating amounts of time that spent on your porn use. Sometimes you lose hours at a time. You start to actually develop an inability to form lasting social and intimate romantic relationships. You start to see feelings of shame, depression, isolation, and you start to lose interest in non-porn activities, whether it be work, school, family, exercise, socializing. And then at the very end where I got, where it reaches a tipping point, you reach what's called the, you know, the critical phase of addiction. It's viewing more intense or bizarre content, escalation from, you know, just two-dimensional viewing to a taking it outside the computer, or in my case, I moved on to chat rooms so I could interact. You actually start having trouble at work or school related to poor performance. Maybe you're even misusing the company computers or school computers. And then, of course, at the, you know, at the very end of it, you've got your financial issues where you can end up ruined, and you get your legal issues where you can end up ruined. By that point, you should just have red flags popping up all over the place.
What are some of the warning signs that can be observed in others, you know, spouses, friends, pastors?
Look for detachment. Look for detachment and people being secretive about what they're using a computer for. Again, it's like if a lot of it is in that ongoing signs. Are the people who you love spending more time on the computer but hiding what they're trying to do? Are they fumbling with excuses for what they're trying to do? Do they seem to isolate a lot more than usual? Do they seem, has their, if you're their romantic partner, do they seem to be losing interest in that way? And important to say, losing interest does not mean they're losing interest in you. It means they're losing interest in general. A lot of women who have men that, turn to porn often feel like they're the problem, and they are not the problem at all. And just look for those disintegrating relationships. You know, the person doesn't want to talk. The person, you know, wants to be with their computer alone when they're with you doing another activity, maybe out to dinner, out to a movie. They're preoccupied in their mind because they want to be back in that one place where they have control, where they feel like they can escape, where they can visit their own little world that is so much better than the real world.
Yeah, that's scary. Wow. What other statistics can you share with us?
Oh, God, I could share a million statistics. How many hours do you, how many hours do you have? I guess some of my favorites were the most telling. Across America right now, 18% of men have self-diagnosed themselves in all age groups. So you're looking at 1 out of 5 men who thinks they're addicted to pornography, or roughly about 22, 23 million. The Bureau of Labor several years back did a study to see how much lost time was at work. And they actually did this study in connection with March Madness basketball pools. But what they found was 28% of people admitted to using a pornographic site on a computer in the previous month at work. So that means 37 million people in America had actually utilized their work computer to look at pornography, which that blows my mind because I wasn't even part of that group. In 2010, so I imagine this is only worse, 2010, the Coalition for the Protection of Children and Families released a study saying that 47% of families in the United States reported that pornography is a problem in their home. Now think about that. That's half the homes in the country say that pornography is a problem, yet we can't talk about this. We can't talk about the fact that people are just looking at it. We can't talk about the fact people are getting very ill from it. We need to start, need to get off our high horse that this is about sex, and we need to stop lying to each other that it's the other guy that's looking at it, and have some real discussions, because this is going to make, like I said, this is going to make the opiate crisis look like nothing in 50 years when half the men in this country have a sexual dysfunction.
Yeah, amen. Joshua, tell us about your book.
Yeah, so I, what was ironic about my entire time was shortly after I was arrested, I entered my first rehab facility for alcohol out in California. I was there 10 weeks. That was where I really came to terms with the fact I had a porn addiction, so I went to another program in Texas for 7 additional weeks. And then I, like you mentioned, I did all the learning about it through books, one-on-one therapy, group therapy. When I went to jail in early 2016, I was probably the healthiest version of myself I'd ever been. And after a few days in jail, I started, you know, talking to some of these guys. They were in there for drugs. They were in there for domestic violence. But so many of them had issues with sexuality. So many of them were porn addicts or sex addicts, or, you know, had something going on that they were more embarrassed by that than they were by their heroin use. Or they were more embarrassed that they, you know, had to use pornography than that they knocked their girlfriend around. And I realized that, geez, you know, I'm lucky in that I had the resources upon which to go get help, but a lot of these guys never do. So I decided, instead of wasting my time watching TV or learning how to play cards, I was going to write a book. So I sat there, and for many months I wrote my book. It's not a self-help book per se, although I think a lot of people are getting a lot of help out of it. And it's not a book that's chock full of statistics, because I think that there's one statistic in the entire book. It's really the book about how I descended into pornography addiction. And the reason I wrote it as such is I hope that people will read it and see it as a cautionary tale. If I, who was a pillar of the community, who, you know, wife and kids, good jobs, a local politician, by all means living the perfect life, like you said, if I can be a porn addict, anybody can. Absolutely anybody can. And even more importantly, it's for the person who might be a porn addict in the early stages or in the ongoing stages, who looks at my story and says, you know, okay, I would never go into chat rooms. I would never do that kind of stuff. Well, I'll tell you, 20 years of my addiction, I would have said the same thing. But the perfect storm of events came together. And even though for 99.5% of my addiction, I never would have gone into a chat room, I ended up in a chat room. So if I can end up there, you can end up there. So I try to use it as a cautionary tale. Go get some help. If people are interested in getting the book or learning more about my recovery, because while the book is about my descent into the addiction, I do have a website where I focus on my recovery. That is recoveringpornaddict.com. And I mentioned earlier that I also do counsel some people. You can get a link right there. There are also a lot of resources if you're interested in learning about rehabs or 12-step groups or anything like that. I'm trying to make this a one-stop shop, easy use for anybody who might be a porn addict, because there just isn't much out there. So recoveringpornaddict.com.
Is your book available on Amazon?
It's on Amazon, yep, and the link on my site does go to Amazon. The book is called, appropriately enough, The Addiction Nobody Will Talk About.
Amen. How's it been received?
Oh, so well. I couldn't have asked for it. I was worried that it was going, there were going to be a lot of people who dismissed it immediately because of what the subject matter was, or because I was arrested, so I am kind of an imperfect messenger. But it's been so much better than I could have accepted. I just found out the other day it's now in over 200 libraries throughout the U.S. So it's, you know, it's getting out there. I hope the message is continuing. I've actually started on a second book. I'm writing it with a therapist out of California, geared toward the female partners of male addicts, just discovering what's going on, because that's the biggest audience right now when it comes to porn addiction, who's looking for materials that just don't exist. We've got to get more out there for people.
Amen. Well, Joshua, it has been a pleasure talking with you today. Unfortunately, we're all out of time. I'd like to have you back on again at some point in the future, because I believe this is a message that we must share on an ongoing basis.
You're absolutely right.
It's taking a lot of courage for you to stand up as a voice, almost as one crying out in the wilderness on this subject. And my prayers are with you, brother.
One becomes two, two becomes three, and then we lick this problem eventually.
Amen. If someone, maybe some pastor, wants to ask you some questions or invite you to come out and speak to their group or meeting or church about this subject, how can they get in touch with you?
Actually, there's a contact form right on the website, so head over to recoveringpornaddict.com. I've spoken at churches, at libraries, with civic groups. I can tailor the program exactly to the correct audience, so no worry about, you know, anything being graphic or not being appropriate for the audience, because, you know, everybody needs to hear this. Everybody needs to hear this.
Amen. Well, Joshua, I do appreciate you coming on. Folks, I highly, highly encourage you to go check out Joshua's website, recoveringpornaddict.com. Get his book. You know, it may be a sensitive subject. You know, why are you buying this book? but it's something that needs to be read. I mean, you need to get this information. You've heard the statistics, and you've heard people say, don't become a statistic. All right? That's our word for you today. Josh, I thank you for coming on again. And, you know, folks, again, we're all out of time for today. For Joshua Shea and myself, this is Pastor Robert Thibodeau reminding you to be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this. Your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts, share your unique insights, and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a Faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.